And welcome again to another Weekend Wrap, this edition the Frio game, and thankfully the wrap will be marginally more exciting than the match itself because I'm joined tonight by Scorpus. How are you going, mate?
Yeah, not doing too bad, and I definitely agree last week's match was, not great.
Yeah, chalk and cheese over the weekend before, but thanks for getting me out of a pickle, mate, because I don't think the listeners would really be too keen on listening to me crap on by myself and answering my own questions for 45 minutes, so good stuff.
Yeah, no worries.
Nikki away this week with injury / illness, so hopefully she's okay. Shout out to her. So, mate, we'll just quickly run through the scores of the weekend before we get into our game. Friday night, obviously, we had the Kangaroos getting up over the Bulldogs in a surprisingly low-scoring match. That was a bit of a shock.
It's just a really interesting match, that one. I managed to catch the whole thing, and I thought it would be double the scores on both ends, but just a really tough, scrappy match.
Yeah, two teams that were certainly committed. I'm the same as you. I expected a bit of a shootout, but I think the Bullies seem to want to shut it down and play a little bit slower tempo, and maybe that's a reflection of the injuries they've got at the moment. Saturday, of course, we had the Saints in a smallish surprise over the D's by nearly 40 points. We had GWS smacking Hawthorn. Maybe not a surprising result in terms of win-loss, but certainly the margin, certainly Scorpus caught me by surprise.
Oh, yeah, that match. Hawthorn were just a completely different side from the one that faced us the week prior. GWS were awesome, and yeah, I was expecting a GWS win in the range of maybe like 10 points, but the fact they came out and basically obliterated them really shows how good they're going to be this year.
Yeah, makes you wonder whether the multiple six-day breaks finally caught up with Hawthorn on the road, but it'll be interesting to see whether that's a blip on the radar. Or, I mean, surprisingly, Hawthorn's percentage is down around 91%, so they're tailing off quite significantly there. The pair got up over what must rate as the worst team currently in the AFL, and that's including Essendon and Fremantle. Over Richmond by, in the end, about 6 goals. So they'll be up and about. I noticed Kane Corns on Footy SA or whatever the heck that show is on Sundays was like, if I had a dollar for every time he said the Port Adelaide way, I'd probably be able to shout you a few beers down the pub tonight, mate.
Oh, not the bloody Port Adelaide way. I mean, I know they're really up and about on the board at the moment about like, oh, you know, Port Adelaide's back. You know, we're back playing Port Adelaide football. And I honestly reckon that any team in the AFL would have beaten Richmond that night. They were absolutely atrocious.
Probably a few teams in the SANFL too. I didn't think Port played all that well, to be perfectly frank with you. Richmond were in the game, surprisingly, for a fair bit of it. But they just had no system whatsoever. They looked completely confused, completely disorganized in terms of their ball movement. It's going to be interesting. I mean, we're going to have to sit through another 45 minutes of Richmond analysis on all the footy shows this Monday night. But Hardwick's got to be under the pump, you would have thought.
Yeah, he's gone. I mean, the fact that, like, they have so many of their key players with absolutely awful disposal efficiency, all their outside players are just butchering the ball, their forward line is basically Jack Riewoldt and that's it, and they just can't get their hands on it and they can't do anything right. They're just a complete mess at the moment, and I think he's got to go.
Yeah, I agree. A time for a change down there, but probably a cultural issue as well down there. Their recruiting is off. Their list management's terrible. Obviously, the front office completely overrated both the list and the coach. So interesting times ahead down in Tigerland. The Cats predictably smacked up a short-staffed Gold Coast Suns down at, what's it called now? Skilled, Kattery, Kadini Park. Simmons Stadium. Danger and Selwood doing well there. And today we had the Swannies just getting up over the Lions. Obviously, I didn't see the game, but sounded like it went right down to the wire. 3 points in the end.
Yeah, it's a bit of a controversy in that match too, because Callum Sinclair, he went down with what appeared to be some sort of severe knee injury, and they brought out a stretcher that ended up not actually being used at all. And the controversy there was that the ball was actually in Brisbane's forward line. This was like right at the end of the match. And, you know, the stretcher, of course, they stopped the game to bring the stretcher out. Yep. And that allowed Sydney Swans to basically come in and flood their forward line, yep, to prevent any further scores. And Callum Sinclair didn't even need to use the stretcher. He managed to get up and, you know, get off. And, yeah, I think Justin Leppich had a bit of a smackdown of that policy, saying that, you know, why even bother bringing out the stretcher if you're not going to use it? And it could have costed them the match.
Well, my understanding is that once the stretcher comes on the ground, it must actually be used. So it'll be interesting to see if there's any comment there. Once they call for the stretcher, even if the guy then has a miraculous Lazarus recovery, he must go off on the stretcher. So unless that rule's changed, there's probably be some comment about that during the week. Carlton predictably got up over Essendon in a fairly low-scoring match, and Collingwood did me no favours in my footy tipping, going down by 10 goals to the Weagles over there at Domain Stadium. So, reasonably predictable round, a couple of iffy results, but it leaves us sitting in, what, sixth spot now?
Yeah, I think that's about right.
Maybe seventh. West Coast might have just jumped over us. But yep.
Yep.
So we move on to our game, Scorpus. And the score, 14 goals, 13, 97 to us. And Frio, 8 goals, 16. Wayward kicking, 64. We're getting up by just over 5 goals. What were your overall thoughts on the match, mate?
Yeah, it was a bit of a shocker, in my opinion. I thought both sides, especially in the first half, were terrible. There's really no other way to say it. Our disposal efficiency and their disposal efficiency was really subpar. Freo came out and they were kicking behind after behind after behind, that even some behinds that were, you know, quite easy for them to kick, they just completely shanked them. We were a shadow of ourselves that, you know, against that we played against Hawthorn last week, you know, completely different. We just didn't come out and play. And then we almost snuck over the line, really, in the second half. Yeah, just a shocker.
Yeah, our intensity seemed down, and that's reflected in a couple of stats that we'll go through in a little while. We certainly didn't crack in to anywhere near the same extent as we did against Fremantle, and credit to them. They came with a plan, probably, I would suggest, almost the first team to come up against us who have got a plan to shut us down. And I know that they pretty much played the old-fashioned Ross Lyon way, but there are a couple of key things that they forced us to do. They forced us to overpossess. They certainly pressed up very hard, which meant that we couldn't get our rebound game running to any significant extent because they crowded up the midfield quite successfully. But they wanted it more for large periods of the game, and you know, were it not for some errant kicking by them in the first half, the pressure would have been on us. But as it turned out, I think we always had that little buffer once we gained the lead back from them earlier in the match, and the impression I got was just the players were doing just enough to win.
Yeah, I agree.
Certainly an ugly game.
Yeah, some of the things that I noticed in particular was the contrast between our first half and second half. It definitely seems like at halftime, Pike came in and adjusted our game plan to sort of stop kicking long in the wind, which was a huge issue on the day, and resort to more short passes, which I think allowed us to slowly but surely penetrate through the massive flood that Ross Lyon was employing in the midfield and defensive zone. They had, you know, maybe two or even three extra players in those areas when we were trying to get through there with our usual running and kicking game plan. That kind of, as you mentioned, you know, nullified our game plan. So, yeah, I think the fact that Pike was able to execute a plan B was a real positive on the day, as well as, you know, some of the ability of the guys to stand up, and especially like Sloan and Tomo and Atkins to sort of, you know, weather through some of the poor kicking and stuff they were doing the first half and managed to get the win. So, yeah, interesting game.
It was interesting. I mean, stats on just a few of the players. Obviously, Rory, our leading stat getter with 31 disposals, 7 marks, 8 tackles, which is also a game or a team high. For us, 4 inside 50s, had another monster game. Scotty Thompson with 30 disposals, only 3 tackles, 3 inside 50s, was solid, if not outstanding. Lukey Brown had a lot of touches from his defensive post there, 27 touches, 6 marks, down back, 4 tackles. Matty Crouch, I thought, was disappointing, and I'll touch a little bit in more detail on Matty Crouch in a second. Still had 27 posies, but 19 handballs, which is probably not the kind of ratio that he's looking for. Only 1 inside 50 as well. And D-Mac in his 150th had what I would call, you know, one of his better games, 22 posies, 13 kicks, 9 handballs, a couple of marks, and 5 tackles. So he's cracking in, and he's, for all his knockers, he's continuing to play at least at the standard that we need him to play. I also thought Seedsman played well in patches, ended up with 19 kicks, 9 marks. I thought his defensive work was quite solid. Probably saw him work back defensively more than we have in the past. So for them, Lachie Neal, 40 touches. People are saying that mostly ineffective, but I wouldn't mind a 40-touch centreman or midfielder in our team, so I'd still be chasing him. Barlow with
33. Yeah, it's interesting because I think Neil had, 62% disposal efficiency? So that's not terrible for an inside midfielder. That's pretty average, especially considering our guys were in the – Jared Lyons had 63. I think – let me have a look. Yeah, Matt Crouch, 74. So it's around the mark.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely. A bloke that can get the ball 40 times. His handball ratio was up a little bit too, 26 handballs. But you wouldn't mind a bloke that could get the ball like that. Michael Walters played well, 29 kicks, 7 tackles as well, which was excellent from him. 7 inside 50s. He was probably, I would have thought, he was their most effective player. David Mundy down back did well. David Mundy did well distributing the ball from down back. You know, and aside from that, it was a pretty even performance. I thought Alex Pierce did well too on Tex, and we'll talk about Tex in a little minute too. But he certainly held his own there. And I thought the Ruckman, Griffin and Clark, did quite well against Sauce. I thought Sauce got the better of them, obviously, around the ground, but certainly their Ruckman held their own in the stoppages. So, you know, no real outstanding performances from us. A relatively even performance. The guy I want to talk about is Matty Crouch. Again, another 27 posies. But if you have a look at his heat map, which I love these heat maps, Scorpus.
Yeah, they're good stuff.
Yeah, most players have a spread in a certain region of the ground. Matt Crouch's red zone is basically the centre circle.
Just the circle.
If you have a look, it's just about the circle.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. So he's not doing enough outside of centre clearances, in my opinion.
I totally agree. I think he was, for someone who got 27 possessions, I thought he was near on invisible on the day. Even guys that got significantly fewer possessions, like Tom Lynch, he wasn't great on the day. He had 19 disposals. I thought he had more of an impact than Matt Crouch. We've also got guys like Charlie Cameron, 16 possessions. I thought I noticed him a bit more. Douglas had 21. I mean, these are guys that were much more effective in their disposal. I think Matt Crouch is what he's doing at the moment is he's trying to execute that handball that is getting to our outside plays, but he just didn't manage to do that effectively on the weekend because of the significant amount of players that were around a lot of the stoppages because, of course, of Frio's flood. So, yeah, I was actually very surprised that he managed to get 27 touches. I thought he was well off getting that. And he also managed 7 clangers too. So a couple of errors there from Matty Crouch. I think he needs to stand up next week.
Yeah, he was a major offender when it came to turning the ball over, and I think some of that, as you say rightly, was because of Fremantle's man-on-man pressure, and it certainly was a man-on-man game. We need him to get his skates on around the ground a little bit more and get more involved around clearances around the ground. I don't think it's acceptable for a midfielder spending 75% of time on the ground to have such a concentrated disposal count in what amounts to probably, what, 1/50th of the ground. Modern football just doesn't work that way, unfortunately. That's something that that an old-school centreman would do, not a modern midfielder. The other bloke is Tex, mate. I've been banging on for a few weeks that he's carrying something. I'm not convinced it's the foot. He looks stiff and sore and heavy and lacks lateral movement. What are your thoughts on Tex?
He has got to have been injured or something. I mean, he could be out of form. I think it's quite easy for us to, you know, sort of discount our star players like Walker just being injured is the reason why he's not impacting on games. And I also don't want to take anything away from Alex Pearce, who is fantastic on Taylor Walker on the day. But, yeah, he's been well off this season. Last season he was very good, finishing, you know, in the top five or so players for overall goals. But he had donuts in the goal column this week, just 10 disposals, only a couple of marks, well, six marks, but that's down on what he usually provides. And, yeah, I agree. I just think in the forward line he doesn't have the mobility that he usually does. He's a big leading forward, not as many contested marks. He really relies on being able to get around, get into space. And over the, you know, opening however many rounds we're up to now, six rounds, he hasn't had the impact that I thought that we'd be seeing from Walker. And I think one of the things that John Pike mentioned in the recent press conference was the fact that he was apparently carrying a foot injury that he's now over, and that's limited his ability to train. So that could be affecting his fitness and his touch. But Don Pike seems to think that Walker will be getting better over the next few weeks, so I think we'll just have to wait and see on that. But there's got to be something that's up with him at the moment.
Yeah, certainly a wait and watch on Tex at the moment, I believe. He doesn't look confident, certainly in the air he doesn't look confident. His second efforts are spasmodic, and when he does put in a second and third defensive effort, he's usually effective, but often we see him stationary 5 or 10 metres from a contest. But he's just not presenting enough, in my view. It was interesting when Pikey pushed Jenkins back deep in the last quarter that Jenkins was actually presenting quite well. And that's exactly what we want from the Texan, and it just doesn't seem to be there at the moment, so hopefully he turns it around. Cole Hardigan, who's been a whipping boy, although I've been a fan for a couple of years now, really starting to cement his spot in that back six, took some telling marks. I can't think of him putting a foot wrong, actually, during the match. How'd you see it?
I thought he was by far our best tall defender, and I think he's been the best tall defender for us over the past couple of weeks. He's been absolutely fantastic. There's really nothing that I can say about him that's bad at the moment. He's really performing to the level I think a lot of us were really hoping that he'd get to over the past couple of seasons. Of course, he used to be a bit of a clanger merchant in his opening games, but now that he's gotten up to, you know, however 30-ish games or so at the moment, he's been performing really well, and I think he just has the knack to get into the right positions even better than Daniel Talia is at the moment. I think Hardigan has really been adapting to our new defensive, you know, trying to peel off from your man and spoil and do all that stuff better than Talia has been at the moment. And while Talia has also been very solid, Hardigan was fantastic on the weekend. And yeah, don't see anyone calling for him to be dropped for Sam Shaw or anything anytime soon. He's a lock.
Well, the heat's gone on Kyle Chaney, and again, Kyle had a bit of an up-and-down game. What he does well, he does very well, but he seems to have a couple of concentration lapses at key moments during the game. I thought overall he was serviceable. People were talking about Walters' effort. I don't think Kyle was on Walters for the whole time, to be honest.
And he was not.
Yeah.
He was on Ballantyne, actually, for most of the game. Walters was mostly on Brown.
Yeah, that's what I thought as well. And it's quite interesting that Brownie got so many touches. So clearly, I think when Rory Laird went off for a little while, that might have just thrown us into a little bit of chaos down forward, or down back for us, I should say. But I thought Kyle was serviceable, and without any real option standing up, he's probably our best option. The only case could probably... left field case, I guess, that could be made is for Kyle to come out and for Wayne Miller to come back in off a half-back flank, which might well be a possibility against the Bullies next week, given their lack of height.
Yeah, I don't like the idea at all of placing Miller in the back line. I just feel he has the skills to be a really damaging half-forward wing player. And, yeah, I just think if we were going to go without Kyle Cheney, and I'm not saying that we should, I think we should keep Cheney in, but if we were to get him out of the side, I think we should bring Miller in but play him as a forward and put back maybe someone like a Brody Smith or a Seedsman, even Atkins maybe, into a more of a defensive role. I just think that the talents of Miller are much more suited to the forward line, as well as McGovern. We've seen a couple of people on the board suggesting that, you know, the aerial prowess of McGovern and his ability to put on a lot of defensive pressure make him more suited to the back line. But I just think those two players provide a lot more to us in the forward half of the ground, especially McGovern, who has been hitting the scoreboard recently and doing a lot of good things in that area. So, yeah, I think we've got to, if we are going to bring him out, we've got to put someone else back that's not either of those players.
Yeah, it's an interesting conversation. I guess the case for Miller going back is that with our style of play and being trying to be creative off that half back line, we could probably be accused of lacking one dynamic player back there. You know, Rory Laird and Lukey Brown are certainly solid and effective players. You could probably make a case for a playmaker a la Andrew McLeod, Simon Goodwin coming off the halfback flank as they did particularly earlier in their careers. Someone who could actually get the ball out of there with a bit of pace and a little bit of class, feeding out to Seed and Smithers on the wings for a quick transition. I don't know. Probably my biggest fear on Miller going back is just his overall lack of strength. Whether he would be able to compete defensively is probably the key question there for mine.
Yeah, I think he's probably not as solid, well, definitely not as solid, in fact, compared to Cheney in terms of defensive ability. I mean, on the weekend, Cheney was on Chris Mayne quite a lot. He's a 188-centimetre forward or thereabouts, and I just think if we had Miller on Mayne instead, that it would have been a quite unfavourable matchup. And Cheney, as well as, apart from not being a very attacking player, his strengths are definitely in his ability to spoil, his ability to read the play in the back lines, and his ability as an actual defender. And I think if we were going to replace him, it would need to be with a person who plays a very similar role. I don't think we necessarily need more attacking players down there. So, I don't know, maybe a Jake Kelly type player. Some people have said Sam Shaw could come in, maybe even Tommy Duday in the future could replace Cheney down back. But now the role that he's playing, I don't think there's very many people that could replace him.
Certainly not on our list, and Kirtley Hampton a little way away yet, so he's out of the equation as well. Look, it was interesting to see how the team stats ended up for this game, and the thing I guess that is a little bit of a concern is how Fremantle forced us to overpossess the ball. We had 430 disposals to 376 at nearly a 1-to-1 kick to handball ratio, which was probably a little bit more than what we would liked. And certainly our disposal efficiency was up around the usual mark, our possessions per scoring shot and our possessions per inside 50s were certainly higher than our season average. So we certainly were tested and we struggled. You could see it visually. We struggled to get through Fremantle's high press. And you're right, Pikey did tweak the game plan in the second half and we tried to pick our way through a little bit more rather than attempt the run and gun and turn the ball over in the conditions. But it'll be interesting to see how teams in the future adapt their own game plans to try and combat what is clearly our advantage. We rank first in rebounds 50 per game across the competition at the moment. So teams will be targeting that and trying to shut us down through the midfield. So that's going to have to be a situation that the team looks at a little bit more closely, I think.
Yeah, I think the one thing that I've really noticed, and I mentioned it a little bit earlier as well, is we tried to do our signature move, I guess, which is to put a lot of players in a long chain of handballs, I guess, to sort of move away from the stoppages. And because Frio were putting, you know, one or two guys around those stoppages extra, the handball chain didn't really work because we didn't have either man on man or a Frio player was just able to intercept that last handball that would have been the release. So I'm not sure that there are too many other teams that have the defensive ability to do what Ross Lyon's team did. And also, I think one of the issues was that, and it really showed in the way that Frio was pretty much unable to score, was when you start putting those extra numbers into the midfield or into the defensive zone, you're really exposed when you want to attack. And if you don't have a good leg speed, and Fremantle is not a team with very good leg speed, that when you start trying to transition, you've forced a turnover from us or something, that they don't have the personnel in the forward line or the personnel to be able to easily transition that. And yeah, I could see us in the future maybe just cleaning up a little bit, and instead of trying to handball completely into the clear, that we'll try and kick out just in a little bit more congestion than we're used to. And I think if we did that against Fremantle on the weekend, that we would have probably put on maybe four or five more goals if we just managed to get a little clearing kick out to the advantages of one of our guys that were higher up the ground in our structure, that we could have done a lot better than we did. But I guess that's just a learning curve for Don Pike and the team.
Look, absolutely. And it was quite noticeable that Fremantle would get that turnover and then almost in some ways do a bit of a Hawthorn. They'd get to the middle, well, to the centre zone of the ground, and they'd almost stop and wait as their players drop back because they'd pushed up so high. And what was noticeable to me, and it was, you know, whether you can call it unacceptable maybe, but our intensity on the spread wasn't what it has been in the past. Generally speaking, we've been quite adventurous with that first and second give, and then we've been able to break a line, or we've spread and switched quite aggressively as well. There wasn't any of that movement on the weekend. You know, down the ground shots on the telecast showed a lot of guys running at half three-quarter pace. There wasn't a lot of sprinting to position. There wasn't a lot of adventurous disposal. It seemed to be a lot of get-out-of-jail disposals or under-pressure disposals. And so we weren't able to play that normal aggressive attacking style. I guess, you know, you could argue that we won the game, so winning ugly is always a good thing. But against a team that is, as you say, a little bit quicker by foot, and a little bit more damaging. And the team that comes to mind is a team like Sydney, who can be so damaging on the counter-attack. It could find us out a bit, I think. Western Bulldogs will be another one who will test us if we start turning the ball over under pressure, because they're quite they push up quite high as well.
Yeah, and I think another team would also be GWS, might trouble us. But the one thing that, like I mentioned earlier, that I was really pleased with was the fact that Don Pike was able to adjust our game plan during the game. That's not something that we've seen from some of our previous coaches, like Brenton Sanderson or Neil Craig, the guy before him. Yeah, they were very, very stuck in their ways. And I think it's something that's affecting Port Adelaide's team at the moment as well, that they don't have that plan B. We seem to have a plan B, or at least the ability to concoct a plan B during the middle of the game. And
yeah,
I think that'll be a real strength for us throughout the season, is if we can adapt to the game plan. And I'm not quite sure that Fremantle gave the competition a way to defeat us in the way that they played. The fact that we won is obviously an indication that it didn't work for them, but like they won the clearances, but we were even in inside 50s, and a lot of our goals that we kicked were from quite favorable positions for us. So I still think our game plan's working, and that it's more of a fact that we didn't show up on the day more than our plan isn't effective. I think if we came into the game with a bit more of an attitude that this wasn't just an easy game against the team on the bottom of the ladder, and that this was going to be a tough game, it would have come with a lot more intensity, a lot more running, a lot more spread, and that would have made it a much more favorable game for us. So I think if we can get switched on for next week's game, that we can get back to the way we've been playing the first five rounds.
Yeah, look, I don't disagree with that. Fremantle's good players, played well. I don't think there's any, doubt about the fact that, 8 or 9 key injuries to any team is going to knock a fair bit of shine off the class indicator of any team. But they came to play. They had a strategy. I mean, clearly playing two behind the ball when you're kicking with the wind, sort of indicative that you've certainly got a defensive mindset. And as I mentioned earlier, and you agree, I think our intensity levels were off 5%, and our game plan does rely on intensity, it's a high octane sort of a game plan. So you don't bring that to the contest, and all of a sudden you're going to be turning the ball over and missing targets like we did. Look, mate, I think it's a case of we got the 4 points. It was an ugly game. It was a windy day. The other team came to bottle it up, so we just move on, don't you reckon?
Oh, absolutely. I think this is one of the games that we can all delete the replays of. Don't really have any intention of watching that again. I don't really want to see Tom Lynch miss a shot from the goal square. That was a shocker.
Oh, Chief, come on. If you're listening, come on, Chief. I need an explanation on Twitter for that.
That was honestly the worst shot at goal I've seen from a Crows player in years. It was atrocious, but that's something we can forget when we forget this game, so... All good.
Well, he's tried to be too cute and lay it across his boot, and he's kicked the wrong side of the ball, the idiot. There was nothing really terribly wrong with a drop punt from where he was. It didn't have to be that hard. Anyway, I'm sure he'll get... there should be a team fine for that, but never mind. All right, well, look, I think enough said about the Freo game. We've got the points, we're in the 8, and we're negotiating this tough early draw quite well. We will need to step it up a notch or two against Western Bulldogs, although I did think that against quality opposition, the Bulldogs were found out a little bit for class against North Melbourne.
Yep.
They just, you can't lose that many creative running players and not have it impact. And I think it showed in the way Beveridge slowed them down a little bit. They didn't have that same quick transition game going against North that they've shown prior to that game.
Yeah, and one thing I also noticed was that they almost did a Fremantle and were putting a lot of players inside North's forward 50 whenever there was a play that was heading that way. And that really impacted their ability to transition, as you mentioned. They just didn't have that speed out of defence. And, yeah, it looked very clogged up in there. So I think the fact that we managed to play Fremantle this week in the way that Fremantle played, again, they were clogging up our forward 50 a lot, that will give us some lessons on how we can defeat the Dogs in their current game plan. And I actually don't think that the Dogs' game plan will be that effective against us, because we will just be able to kick goals from outside 50. We'll be able to use our precision kicking a little bit more effectively than North, I think, at the moment, and get it into our forwards, hopefully. So it'll be an interesting game, but I think that we have the goods at the moment, especially if we can get back to how we were playing in the Sydney match, to put on a bag against Western Bulldogs. They only kicked 6 goals on the weekend, which is pretty poor for a team that... we saw last year they were kicking huge amounts, and they just don't have the personnel in the forward line or the back line, I think, to take us down. But, we'll talk about that on the preview cast later in the week.
That's right. Yeah, my only comment on that is I think they were pushing back because they just didn't have the height to combat North's 3 talls. So they had to basically crunch the contest, and as you say, that left them a little bit short-staffed down the ground when they tried to transition. It'll be an interesting chat down the week when we know the teams. Just briefly touching on the SANFL, the Adelaide SANFL team had their first loss for the season going down by a point to South Adelaide at Hickenbotham Oval, and I lived down south, and it was as windy as hell. So it would have been a nightmare of a game. 14 goals, 7.91 South to Adelaide, 13 goals, 12.90. The notable stat, I didn't watch the game, the notable stat from the game was that we were held goalless in the last quarter. They kicked 6 goals, 3-3 points in the last quarter after we were, comfortably up at the last change. We were 13 goals to 8 up at the last change, and they ended up overrunning us by a point with a goal. Looks like at the 29.5 minute mark, so right at the end of the end of the game. So disappointing, I guess, but I guess there were two stats that, as I said, I didn't see the game. There were two stats that stood out to me. One was South Adelaide's tackle count versus ours, 63-45, and the other one was the freeze, 29-17.
Yeah, it's pretty typical, isn't it?
29-17. That's a bit of a shellacking from the men in white, as they are in South Australia. But disappointing, I guess, to lose. Bradley Crouch had a lazy 36, 10 tackles as well, which is pleasing.
And 10 clearances.
10 clearances. Yep. 4 inside 50s, 2 rebound 50s. Good game from him. Ellis Yeoman had 32. Good to see him getting into the 30s. Mitch Grigg with 26. I'm not sure where they're playing Mitch at the moment, but he had 4 inside 50s and 3 rebound 50s. So it looks like sort of defensive wingman maybe. Ricky Henderson solid. Wayne Maliri kicked 3 goals. Not much else there. Dean Gore's numbers look a little down for someone who's playing in the midfield. You'd want him to get a bit more of the ball. And it doesn't look like Harry Deer had much of a impact. I don't know whether he was on for much of the game, but he got most of his disposals in the last quarter, I think. So I don't know what was going on there.
I think that I heard something that he was concussed at one point in the game. Maybe he was put back on at some point. I'm really not sure, but yeah, an interesting game to get overrun. We were very undermanned in the back line. We were missing Otten from suspension. Shaw was still out because of his concussion, and Kelly was a withdrawal earlier in the week because of a hand injury. So, yeah, we were playing like Alex Keith, Carey, and Dude down there.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely a demand, probably helped South get over the top in the end. But
in the end, yeah.
We'll put that one behind us.
Oh, yeah, look, I mean, the SANFL team's going well. It's good to see Brad Crouch stake a claim, 10 tackles in particular. Probably rates are higher mentioned to me than the actual disposal count. 10 tackles, 10 clearances. You would suggest that he comes in next week, but we'll have a bit of a chat about that later on. Look, mate, about that's all we've got. I might just briefly touch on the round for next week. We won't go into any details. We've got the Hawks over Richmond. We've got Collingwood Carlton at the G. That'll be a snore fest.
Oh, God. Not watching Cats, that one.
No, Cats and West Coast. It looks like Cats at home, is it? Yeah.
Yes, that is Sydney Stadium.
How do they get 2 home games in a row? That's always a challenge down there. We've got Swannies should get up over Essendon, you'd imagine. We've got the Suns and Melbourne. That'll be an interesting game to see whether Melbourne can bounce back. Dockers and Giants at the at Domain. You would expect that the Giants would get up on that one. Saints and Kangaroos and Port at home to Brisbane. Brisbane's form isn't terrible, so that might be an interesting game. And, of course, we're playing at Etihad on Saturday night against the Bullies. So that's about it, mate. I haven't got much else to talk about. Pretty dour sort of game. We got the 4 points and life goes on. What do you reckon?
Yeah, not very interesting round either with just some of the other matches. A lot of the games were pretty boring, to be honest. A lot of blowouts and all close games that were pretty crap in terms of their skills, like Richmond, Port Adelaide. So hopefully next week some of those other clashes will be a bit more exciting. The fact that we've got Richmond on the Friday night, though, Yeah, that'll be an interesting Friday night match. Maybe they'll replace Carlton for the Shockers on Friday for this year.
Oh, look, can you, like, who's going to watch Richmond v Hawthorn on a Friday night?
Who'll go? Like, they had 27,000 people to their match this week, Richmond home game. It's a Richmond home game next week too, so I don't know. Is everyone already microwaved their memberships and they can't get to it or something? I mean, that's a shocking crowd for a big team.
Yeah. You could, and Hawthorn haven't got a huge following, or they don't seem to get huge attendances anyway. At the G, the G's going to feel empty. They might have to give a few tickets away on the radio on SEN during the week.
Yeah.
Never mind. That's their problem. And we've, as I said, we've started the season probably as well as we can expect, to be honest with you. I think anyone would take 4-2 after six rounds. We've got probably two more tests coming up, and the next one, the Bulldogs, whilst they're slightly undermanned, they still provide a test away from home. So we'll see how we go. Thanks for joining me, Scorpus, and getting me out of a hole.
No worries.
And we'll see you on, well, we'll talk to you on Thursday night, Tuesday Night Live, Big Footy Tuesday Night Live, coming to you again at 8:30 on Tuesday with Peter J and the crew. Until then, we will see you later on.
Yeah, and don't forget to give us a review on iTunes.
Yeah, definitely. So we'll just talk about that quickly. We need likes on Facebook. We need some Twitter activity, and we definitely need some reviews on iTunes. That would be awesome. So people listening to us, especially those that use us on iTunes, get on there and give us 5 stars. Thanks, mate. We'll see you later.
All right, see ya.